that sounds pretty cool. Some new tunes here to get us started. On a Monday night, this is North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com. I almost said MSO Web Radio because I dug out the old ID that my daughter did when she was 4 years old. And I'm going to play that a little bit later on. And we still, you know, it's the MSO Web Radio at More Stuff Online. Of course, MoreStuffOnline.com has evolved into MSO News Sports. But anyway, North Shore Sports Night, basketball, the main topic tonight, among other things. I'm Rick Moore, along with our co-host and super sports analyst and generally ambassador of goodwill is Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And we've got some really good guests lined up this evening, including Pentucket High School girls basketball coach John McNamara, Beverly's boys basketball coach Matt Karakoudis, Mike Grenier, sports journalist and basketball analyst, and of course Gary Larrabee, a golf writer and sports historian. And we may or may not have a surprise high school captain on here. It depends on the timing, so I'll leave that for later on. If not, we will be talking hockey tomorrow. I've got one, two, three, four interviews that we'll be posting on hockey tomorrow. More on that later on. Tim, how you doing?
As we were talking earlier, Rick, I've been better.
Jeez. You know what? Maybe 6 months on Maui might help.
I'd rather take that amount of time in Killarney.
Well, how about half and half? I'll go to Killarney with you. In fact, I'd go to Maui with you if my wife let me.
I've been to Maui. I haven't been to Killarney yet.
I've been to Killarney, and I've been to Maui, and I love them both equally as well. The thing about Maui is that you don't have to worry about the weather. The thing about Killarney is you'd best bring your wellies.
Well, and again, we went to Maui. The day we went to Maui, you needed your wellies.
No way. No way. No, we had...
Yeah, we left the island early, and we had flown over on Hawaiian Air on a turboprop, and they canceled all those flights heading back to the big island, onto the main island, and we were on a 727, and at one point the storm was so bad, the bottom fell out, we must have fell about 10,000 feet.
Oof. Mercy.
Oh, yeah.
No, we had... 10 perfect days on Maui, and we had, Maui and Kauai, and we had 10 days of rain in Killarney. But nevertheless, I'll go back to Killarney in seconds if anybody will, line it up for me. Love it over there. You will love Killarney, Tim. And, you know, maybe we should arrange that. We should all go over there and check out County Kerry. All right. So, anyway, tonight, Tim, we're going to talk some high school basketball. It was a very successful season for basketball and hockey in particular in both the Cape Ann League and the Northeastern Conference. Now, there were some games that were postponed. There was some COVID protocol. But, Tim, as far as I know, there were no major problems in terms of illnesses. So the coaches, the parents, the kids did a spectacular job of doing the COVID protocol.
Yeah, you know, the thing of the hockey, you know, that the kids had to stay, they couldn't use the locker room, they had to sit in the hallway, they had to be spaced 6 feet apart, and all the photos that I saw, you know, the teams did that, they literally kept their distance, and then once they were on the ice, they had the mask, and they were skating by each other, and of course they couldn't check along the boards, so they did a good job of limiting the opportunity for a lot of close contact, and kudos for the not only for the league for coming up with those ideas, but also to the coaches and the kids themselves for following the guidelines that were set.
Absolutely,
that's what made it all possible.
Absolutely, and I we'll be talking tomorrow with several coaches in hockey, and also a Newburyport hockey captain, and the coaches to a person, Tim, all talked about the emotional stress of this particular season. As you know, as a baseball coach and as an educator, working with high school kids can be stressful in a normal era, but with the extra added pandemic problems, these coaches, again, I don't think you can't give them enough credit. They really have done a spectacular job.
No, but you know, at the same time, too, they knew what was at stake, that if they didn't follow you know, these protocols, that the seasons could come to a very quick end, and they might not even come back throughout the duration of the pandemic, as long as restrictions have to be put in place. So it was to their advantage to be rigid and stick to the rules. I know there are a lot of guys that didn't like some of the limitations, but you had to abide by them. Everybody had to abide by them, and they did that, and they made it work for that very reason.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, stress. All right, we're going to take our first break here a little bit early so we can check in with Pentucket girls basketball coach John McNamara. And thank you for being with us. Please pass the word. This is MSO News Sports. It's North Shore Sports Night. And you can get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com. That's msonewsports@gmail.com. So we'll take our break and we'll be back.
This is MSO Web Radio at morestuffonline.com.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we are back live, and my great pleasure to introduce Coach John McNamara of Pentucket High School girls basketball. Coach, first of all, congratulations. What an amazing season.
Yeah, it was certainly different, but very rewarding, and you know, we finished strong, which was nice. We had got in 13 games, which, you know, at the beginning of, you know, after around Thanksgiving, it didn't look like we were going to get many games in, if any, so that was... It turned out to be a really fun year for us.
Well, before we get to some specifics, we want to talk a little generalities. Tim and I were talking just a minute ago about the coaching. I want to call it stress. You guys, as educators, as coaches, it's a dual role because you're dealing with the kids' necessity to do well in academics. You're dealing with their safety on the court. But and then on top of all of that is interscholastically, you're dealing with the stress of teaching them to win. The idea of interscholastic sports is to win and have fun at the same time, but mostly to win.
Yep.
And then you add the pandemic on top of that. I wonder, Coach, if you could just give us a little bit about your feeling about going into the season, what maybe some of your concerns were, and how the kids actually work with you early on.
Sure. You know, we had a battle to have our season, so in a sense, the girls had this was back around right after Thanksgiving, had to advocate for themselves. They went to the Board of Health meetings to try to get our gym open. They went to school committee meetings. They picketed on the street. So it was really unique to see the girls step up that way and come out of their comfort zone to have to do those things. So once the season got around, you know, the team already had a tight bond. The parents were tighter than ever because they had to go to Board of Health meetings and, you know, talk to the Board of Health and, you know, basically get them to make a decision that it was okay to play. And then we get to the first practice and we start going over all the COVID protocols. And I'll tell you, I think, you know, we won the Cape Ann League tournament at the end of the year, but I think we won the COVID protocol,
trophy
matchup as well. Yeah, trophy, whatever you want to call it, because our girls bought into it. We sanitized. Every time we walked off the court on a water break, we sanitized, sat in our little assigned cubby chairs, came back on the court, we sanitized before going back on the court, and it just became habit. And you'd watch a sub going into the game, they'd run and sanitize. So I was proud of that as a coach. I know our AD was very proud, and other ADs at schools, you know, mentioned that we were really focused on that stuff. So all that stuff had nothing to do with basketball, and we felt like we already had a successful year. And then, you know, to compete, you know, Pawtucket has high expectations every year, so it was a different year where we didn't have a state tournament to focus on, and it was more about, you know, being our best and going out and playing and competing and treating every game like it could be our last game. I know a lot of coaches have said that, but it was kind of true.
Yeah, right. So Tim?
Perspective was different, but not having that state tournament, in a way, made it a little more enjoyable in a sense because, well, we certainly weren't scouting, you know, all across the state starting in, you know.
Interesting, yeah.
January.
Yeah.
So I think the girls enjoyed it. The girls needed it. I mean, they needed to have some activity, be together with their, you know, teammates, and, you know, wearing a mask was just a nuisance, but it didn't prevent that from happening.
Yeah. Tim?
Coach, and I was going through max prep, and I was looking at the stats and figures and dollars. Again, you got great season, 11-2, and you were as good.
12-1, I don't want to correct you.
Yeah, 12-1.
I'm sorry, they had it at 11-2.
We're not part of Max Prep, so they're probably doing that on purpose.
Oh, okay. Well, here's how they punished you, okay? And I thought this was rather comical, how stuck in the minutiae they get. They said you were number 15 in the state, number 2 in D2 North, but you were number 2,064 nationally ranked.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
I had us in at least the top 2,000.
Oh, God.
I said, really? You got to put that stuff out there? So I thought you might have found that a little.
Who did they have at number one in D2?
You know, I didn't.
Burlington?
You know, I didn't. Yeah, Burl? I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, to get the record straight here, both Newburyport and Pawtucket finished 11-1 in the league, but you guys won the playoff title. And that knocked Newburyport from the ranks of the unbeaten. So maybe we could start there, Coach, with a little review of that game.
Sure. So back early February, we lost to Newburyport by 4, 58-54. And Newburyport played great. They hit big shots, but we weren't happy with the way we played. I wasn't happy with the way I coached. We had a key injury in the first quarter, and our top scorer didn't play the rest of the game. So we were looking forward to an opportunity to have a rematch with them. And we went into that Cal Championship tournament game and just kind of kept it simple. We didn't have any days to prepare because they moved the game up for the snowstorm, and I think that helped us. And, you know, we focused on defense, and our defense, we gave up 58 the first time. I think they scored 23 the second game. And we just completely shut them down, and it was very rewarding. You know, we joked about how it's only our third time winning our last game because we've won 2 state championships, and every other year you end the season with a tough loss at the Garden or at the Songus Center. It was nice to get on a bus and drive home with a win to end the season.
Yeah, one of the another coach talked about that earlier, winning that last game. Coach, tell me a little bit, and then I'll give it back to Tim. But tell us a little bit about Arielle Cleveland.
Yeah, she was the one that got hurt at the 4-minute mark of that first quarter at Newburyport. And she was, a big part of our championship year, her sophomore year. She came off the bench and played big minutes. And she's kind of a stabilizer on offense, particularly, even though she plays more of a forward, she's kind of our point forward. And losing her, we were just a little out of sorts offensively, had more turnovers than we probably wanted. You know, she's going to go on and play somewhere at D3 college basketball. She's a good volleyball player. She sang the national anthem when we won the state championship in Worcester, and she sang it at the Garden. So great all-around kid.
Did she make the pizzas, too, for the pizza parties?
Well, we couldn't have any of those.
Oh, that's right.
So no.
Tim?
Coach, looking at your team, you're still very young. A lot of positions looking forward a little bit to next year. That's going to make you feel pretty good.
Yeah, you know, we always try to have a mix. I mean, I'm not opposed to bringing freshmen up onto the varsity and maybe not playing as many minutes, but learning the system and competing against the better kids because I think it just gets them prepared for their sophomore year. You know, I think it's a little overrated sometimes when you say, well, they're better off playing JV minutes in a game. Well, I don't know. If every day is a tough practice for them, I think they can get more out of that. So we always try to have a balanced roster with, you know, some sophomores and freshmen on it. And we have some pretty good young kids that, you know, I think had a good developmental year and didn't have the burden of, you know, having to do everything. But now they're ready to step into that role next year.
Coach Bragg, go ahead, Tim.
How successful were the freshmen in JV season? Were they able to get a full schedule as well?
So, believe it or not, this year we did not have a JV team. We lost some kids that didn't come out because of COVID. Incoming freshman class during their travel team 4 years, they only had like 6 or 7 kids every year. They had a tough time getting kids, so we didn't have a JV team this year. We never have a freshman team. We usually keep it at 2 teams. So I kept 17, 18 on the varsity and just rotated kids dressing, you know, the kids that would have been probably on the JV team. So make practice is a little tricky, but I thought it was, you know, one, more important for kids to have something to do in this pandemic, and also gives them a chance to develop and see what it takes to be a varsity player.
I've been talking. Go ahead, Timmy. You got one more?
Go ahead.
I've been talking, Coach, with coaches about how they're wrapping this year up because you know, there is the traditional, you have your spaghetti dinners or your pizza parties, and then you have your banquet and so on, the pictures and the awards. How are you guys wrapping this year up?
It's still being finalized. We were talking about having a Zoom banquet, maybe with the players in the gym and the parents at home. And now we're even trying to look and see if we can get the auditorium and social distance and try to do something like that. We've tried to be creative this year. We had a, because they weren't doing the pasta parties and get-togethers and, you know, typically after the first Friday practice, they go out to like a friendlies or something. We couldn't do any of that, so we did like a remote trivia night with the parents. We got one of our former Pawtucket alumni that kind of does that type of thing online. And we had a fun family night of, you know, trivia. So we try to do different things, but I'm hoping that at least we get the team together with the parents on Zoom. And if all things work out, we get everybody in the auditorium. That'd be kind of nice, because you do want to wrap up the season and, you know, acknowledge the seniors who have put in 4 years in the program and, you know, kind of pump up the other kids to get, you know, focused for next year.
John, Tim and I are both educators. In fact, we both taught at Gloucester High School. But former coaches, the job you guys have done this year, and I say it to every single coach, as a spectator, as a fan, as a parent, I can't thank you enough for what you've done. You've kept the kids safe. You got them to enjoy this season somehow. And not only that, but you went above and beyond and won a championship. So congratulations, Coach.
Well, thanks. It was, you know, everyone says the kids needed it. I think the coaches needed it too. So it was, it was fun for the coaches. It was fun for the players. We did make practices, you know, not as much of a grind this year. I took that into account. Had a lot of opportunity to play. You know, we dressed 14 to 15 kids. Every game, but I think two, we got all 15 in. So we kind of went out of our way to do some of that. And in a way, it kind of made it a little more enjoyable from the coaching point of view as well. So thank you.
Fantastic. Well, great meeting you, Coach, and we'll talk again in the not too distant future.
Thanks, and I appreciate you know, the support for high school sports.
Thank you very much, Coach. Stay safe.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right, that is Coach John McNamara of Pawtucket High School. He's the girls' high school basketball coach, and they actually tied for the regular season with Newburyport, but then they beat Newburyport in the tournament. Actually, Newburyport was unbeaten in the season. They knocked them off. So a great win for Pawtucket. Great season for Newburyport as well. And coming up, we're going to talk about another great season as we'll chat with Matt Karakoudis of Beverly Boys Basketball. I think they went 13-0. Does that sound right, Coach?
That's what I'm seeing, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll find out about that after we take our next break. So please stay with us. This is MSO News Sports, and this is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be back.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Beverly High School basketball coach, Matt Karakoudis. And, Coach, congratulations. A bit of an abbreviated season, but a perfect season nonetheless. It's going to feel good.
Yeah, we're real excited with how the season went. You know, we knew that we were lucky to get as many games in as we did. Some schools were unfortunate, didn't get any games in. So even though it was an abbreviated season, I think we took a step forward for our young team. So We're happy with how it played out.
You know, Matt, Rick and I were talking just before we went on the air, and we were talking about the equipment of the coaches and the players, working with the MIAA and the league officials to make sure that you follow the protocols in order to keep the season in place. And I said that, you know, kudos go to all groups, because without doing that, if you had a large number of cases break out, they'd have shut the season down on you.
Oh, for sure. No doubt about it. I thought the school did an amazing job. Our athletic director, Dan Keith, and our trainer, Corey, they did a great job. They supplied us with all the cleaning products, the masks, sanitizer, everything that you could think of that you needed to keep yourself safe. They supplied us, and there was no shortage of any of that type of stuff. And we just followed the guidelines set by the MIAA, and it kind of took care of itself. You kind of got into a habit of just, you know, making sure everything was sanitized, the balls and the gym and that type of stuff, and it became second nature kind of quickly.
Okay, now how do you structure a practice of basketball? Because I played basketball in high school myself, and it gets rough and tumble when you get in there. You know, there's certain drills you're doing. And of course, once you go one on one, you're doing a 5-on-5, and you're slamming bodies around. How did you figure out a way to control that?
It is definitely difficult. I mean, just by the way you just explained it, you know, basketball, it is a contact sport and it is physical. But the way we kind of dealt with that was, well, first off, we had limited practice time. We didn't practice as long and as much as we normally would in a normal season. And we kept the JV team and the freshman team and the varsity team all separated on different courts and practicing at different times. And we tried to limit, you know, to the court to have, you know, about six kids down one end, six kids down the other end for a majority of practice. And then when we had to go together, we would try to stay socially distant until it was time to actually work on something in the scrimmage, which was allowed. But we, you know, it was really just trying to maintain your social distancing as much as possible. And then when you really needed to get down to it, then, you know, you kind of went back to normal the best you could.
Okay.
Matt, some of your scores, hold on here, I lost my mic here for a second.
All right.
This is normal, Matt.
Yeah, this is typical. This is typical.
Right.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Some of your scores, I'm looking at them, man, over the course of the season, and they're ridiculous, which leads me, on a good note for Beverly, which leads me to ask the question, did you get some of your other kids some playing time? In other words, did you get to use the bench?
Oh, we used the bench a lot this year. Whether games were close or blowouts, we normally played at least 10 guys each game, and then there was, I would say, half the games we probably checked all 13 kids in.
Wow.
Games that were on the roster, which was nice.
Wow. Well, that bodes well, too, for next year. Now, brag about some of your kids, Matt.
Well, easy to do. They're a great bunch of kids. We had a good mix. We had two senior captains, Brennan Frost and Cam Jones. Cam Jones started for us as a senior captain. He had a really nice year. He made one of the biggest leaps from junior year to senior year that I have ever seen in a player. He went from not playing very much at all last year to starting and finishing out games for us this year. And Brendan Frost, our other senior captain, he's a really solid baseball player and just all around great kid. And he did very similar to Cam, where he made a nice jump from junior to senior year. He didn't play as much as he probably would have liked this year, but he was an amazing vocal captain, you know, at practice, in the games, off the court, on the court, just kind of everything you could ask for. And then on the court, you know, a majority of our leadership and scoring came from sophomore Gabe Copeland. He led us in scoring. He averaged about 18 points per game. Freshman point guard Rook Landman, he started at the point for us every game this year, which was great to see because he has a ton of potential, and he missed half of last year after breaking his back, so it was nice to see him come back and play a full season. And let me see, we had a couple of juniors, Tristan Abreu, who's also coming off of an injury last year and missed the second half of last year, and the really nice soccer player Nick Braganka had an unbelievable season for us, just an all-around glue guy. I could go on and on. Like I said, we play 11 guys,
yep,
10, 11 guys, and we're returning 11 for next year. So, wow. I mean, you could talk about this team for quite some time.
Matt, now, the last couple of years, you had the benefit of two big guys, not exceptionally tall, but over 6'2", physical studs on the floor for you. You also demonstrated the ability to shoot the lights out of the basket. How did you do it this year? Because you weren't blessed with the real big bodies this year.
No, I mean, we definitely missed Duncan and Jack, and you know, and I think a lot of people forget about losing Justin and Damian. We had a senior backcourt that, you know, started and played every game for us, and we lost those two guys as well. But size wise, for sure, we are not a big team. But we are a scrappy team, and we are a strong team. We have strong guards, physically strong. And on the defensive end, you know, we really lock in. And same thing when it comes to rebounding, like I've taught these guys. You could even look at Jack Crowley from last year. He's only about 6'2", and he's one of the best high school rebounders I've ever seen. Rebounding is all about will and then positioning. You know, if you want the ball, you can go get the ball. It doesn't really matter how tall you are. I've seen plenty of tall guys who are awful rebounders because they don't want the ball, you know. And then we just have a great attitude as a team. We're hungry, we play hard, we play physical. So that we kind of made up for the lack of size with our aggression when it came to defense and rebounding.
And you kept most teams under 40 points, which is, I think, remarkable given the, you know, the parity in the league and some of the teams that you guys have played. Coach, I just want to say one thing as we wrap this up here that we've been talking. I think Tim will second it. The job you've done this year, especially, you know, to win another championship, but with the stress of COVID and all that you do, you have to feel a little bit prouder. I know that this is sort of it's almost like a preseason for next year because there was no state tournament. However, the accomplishment has got to feel extra special this year, I think. And as a fan, we thank you for the work that you've done with these kids.
I really appreciate the kind words. And I'll tell you, it really is a special feeling this year because I know coming into this year, a lot of people did not expect much from Beverly basketball after losing Jack and Duncan and the senior backcourt, you know, and having the best season Beverly's ever had and winning the North title. People, I'm sure, were like, well, how are you going to cap that off? You know, how can you one-up that?
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
And then this year we come in, a majority of the game, we're playing a freshman and three sophomores for a majority of the game. You know, and for these guys to be able to run the table and just their attitudes was incredible. And talk about being excited as a coach. I have 11 out of the 13 guys coming back next year, which is just, I think it's going to be scary for everybody else.
All right,
we're moving up to Division I. And our guys are ready. We're going to make a really tough schedule, and hopefully we can make a run in that Division I tournament.
And we'll be there. If Bill Newell's not covering the games, then Tim and I will be, so I appreciate it, Coach. Hey, thanks so much. Great meeting you, Matt. I know that Bill and Tim have talked with you, and I've talked with you a couple times this year. It's really exciting, and again, thank you so much for the stuff you do. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Believe me, I love it. I'm the lucky one.
Yeah, all right. Sounds good. Stay safe, Coach.
You too.
Great
Thanks,
job,
guys.
Talk to you later. That is Beverly High School basketball coach, boys basketball coach, Matt Karakoudis. And Tim, pretty exciting stuff, man. He's got 11 guys coming back.
And like you said, people will be looking at them on schedule going, okay, this isn't, you know, a team that's unprepared to come into D1. This is a team with 11 guys who just 2 years ago won the state title last year. They ran the table to win their league. You're going to have to really do something to impress them, because they're going to come out and they're going to impress you. So
fantastic.
I want to wish the Panthers the best of luck as they move up next year. Congratulations on what they did this year. And I remember when I was playing high school basketball, I couldn't shoot worth a bag, but the coach told me, if there's a ball, get it. So that's what my job was. My job was to rebound and get the ball. And it is. He said, it's all attitude. You got to want the ball. So I wanted the ball so I could give it to somebody else. And my coach actually told me, when you get the ball, give it to somebody who needs the ball.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Good advice, Coach. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
All right, figured some of it out, man. Without Kearns here, he's supposed to push the buttons. He's the engineer. Anyway, we are back on North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, and we're now joined by Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. And Gary, it's been a couple of weeks, man. I missed you. How you doing?
Doing wonderfully, guys. I mean, you have a lot of golf to talk about, that's for sure.
Looking forward to it, so why don't we dive right in?
We've got...
What was that, Rick?
Gary's going to get us started, Tim. So you pick it up after Gary gets us started here.
Thanks, Rick. Hi, Tim.
Good evening, Gary.
We've got two interesting stories, obviously from big time golf, with Max Homa winning yesterday the LA Genesis Open, a playoff out in California, and the fact that the USGA last week named Mike Wann the LPGA commissioner for the past 11 years as the new executive director of the USGA, who will be succeeding Mike Davis around mid-year after the last 10 years where Mike has been in charge of the USGA. So exciting news of that end, Tim.
Yeah, you know, it's solid leadership that is going to take them down the road. And you know, we look at the the number of outings and the way they managed to deal with them with the COVID. It's been an amazing season for them so far.
And I think it shows that this is our new breed, I think, of golf leadership, at least in America, with Jay Monahan from Winchester and formerly of the Fenway Group, now the tour commissioner, and a fellow, I think, about the same age, maybe a few years younger, but I think they're both in their mid-late 30s, maybe early 40s. Mike Wynn taking over at the USGA later this year. Should be very exciting to see how Mike Wynn takes the USGA down the road. At the same time, guys, we've got a couple of sad stories to report of a local nature. First of all, we should mention and send out our warmest prayers and concerns for Kip Tyler, who was the green superintendent, course superintendent at Salem Country Club for 38 years. Until he retired at the end of the 2019 season. Kip had underwent brain surgery last week, and we're hoping for the very best from that. I spoke to Kip the day after the surgery. Actually, sounded great. But, of course, it's all about the pathology report, which comes out in the next couple, within the next 2 weeks, to find out the real situation for Kip. So our prayers and all of our thoughts go out to Kip and his family, who is just beginning to enjoy his second year of retirement after, you know, led Salem Country Club to great exposure when they hosted the two USGA Senior Opens and a USGA Women's Open since he came on board back in 1982. The last somewhat piece of sad news from Salem Country Club just came down today that Kirk Hennefeld, who has been the director of instruction for the last 4 years, has decided to retire as a working golf pro, as he called himself today. He'll be turning 65 in May, and he's going to be retiring as a working club pro, but he will still be competing in tournaments both locally, regionally, and hopefully nationally as an outstanding senior player if he can keep it going, if his back holds up, his back has improved since he had a bad condition last fall. So tricky news out of Salem, but really good news out of the USGA and the PGA Tour with Max Homa's exciting win yesterday.
Because we've been talking about, Jordan Spieth and where is he been and is he going to be able to make a comeback. And he had some tournaments where he had played better and he was putting himself in positions to possibly be there on Sunday. But once again, yesterday, the game just wasn't there for him in the last 2 days. And going into Sunday, he was in the top five, and then he ends up not having a good day and ends up 15th.
Well, we have to keep an eye on Jordan, but he's just one of many great stories out there on the tour these days. And this weekend, of course, we thought it was going to be about Sam Burns, who led after the first three rounds, and he led with nine holes to go yesterday. Sam Burns is his name. Looking for his second tour victory. He didn't get it because Max Homa played better, as did Tony Finau, who lost the playoff to Homa. But another example of these young kids out there, and the new breed, if we want to call it that, who ends up winning some of these big tournaments, guys. DeChambeau's under 30, Homa's under 30, Colin Morikawa, who won last year's PGA, is under 30. Dustin Johnson had a chance yesterday but didn't get a run going. It's just another aspect of how fascinating it is to watch the PGA Tour every week and learn whether it's going to be a veteran star like a Dustin Johnson or Rory McIlroy or even a Jordan Spieth breaking through again or a new face like Max Homa.
Gary, when I was growing up watching, and I know you're only a couple years older than I am, So you're in the same category. Rick is much older, so he wouldn't.
bite your tongue.
Is that there was a group of golfers on the tour that you know every week were going to be there on Sunday contesting with each other. And it seemed very hard for younger guys to bust in, and over time one or two did, and they began to make a name for themselves. But lately, these last couple of years, like you said, all these young guns, they're totally fearless. That they have no respect for their elders. They're just coming out and they're looking to take down the guy who's on the top. If they don't fear going against the number one, the number two players in the world.
You're exactly right. Now, Chris, a lot of these young fellows have developed very strong games during their college careers. And as we've talked about in recent years, where they're not afraid of Tiger Woods anymore, they're also not afraid of Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, even Bryson DeChambeau, even though he's one of the younger new stars out there. Brooks Koepka, same thing. And then it's another example, Tim, of where we've got, and Rick, that we've got, you know, so many good players out there. You never know who's going to be breaking through from one week to the next. And now as we leave the West Coast and come to the East, to Florida starting this week at the Concession in Bradenton for this week's tournament, we're getting a little bit closer to the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the big issue is there was some stories that surfaced the last few days, guys, whether or not Tiger Woods is back will be ready to play. It's a waiting game, of course, and that's another storyline to keep an eye out for.
Is the Masters still on for April?
Oh, absolutely. Every tournament's on this year.
Okay.
Scheduled as is. And the Masters will be in its regular time slot.
Okay.
For the first full week in April. And Dustin Johnson defends, and Tiger Woods, we hope, will be playing.
All right. You know, Gary, when does your column start back up again in the Salem Evening Salem News?
I would presume a Masters weekend.
All right. That is way cool. Now, I got to ask
Rick,
you this.
Here's how you can set your calendar. Gary's first article appears, and you see the commercial.
Yes.
For Augusta.
Okay. I know. And I've talked with Gary many times, and I just envy the fact that he got to go to Augusta, and his descriptions of it are amazing. But Gary, I got to ask you, though, this is off topic, okay, and this will be my final question. Is there someone in the sports world that you would still like to interview that you haven't interviewed yet?
That's a very good question.
Mine is easy. Mine's Bill Russell, but I'm pretty sure you've probably somewhere along the line have met Bill Russell.
I have, thankfully, and I have never interviewed Tiger. Excuse me for the frog in my throat.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, I think I'd like to interview Michaela Schifrin.
Yes, yes, yes. I'd like to see that interview too. I love skiing.
I'd like to film it.
You know, she is our latest great Hall of Fame, All World.
Yes.
Skier, and she still continues to set records, even though she has a few more records to set. Hopefully, but she's an extraordinary athlete. Although I would also love to interview, these tennis players amaze me. Tim and Rick, the fellow from Slovakia who just won his 18th major singles title down in Australia, Djokovic.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, I think these tennis players are the most incredible athletes in the world, bar none.
I'm kind of thinking Tate Ferraniak right now myself.
Who?
Great golf swing, great golf swing, great
yep.
Great instructor of the game, and a luscious feminine shape.
I'm glad you used those words, Gary, because it saves me.
Okay, boys. Okay. All right, Gary. Hey, man, thanks for being back this week. I appreciate it, and we are planning to do it again next Monday.
I promise to get rid of this frog by next week.
Ah, yeah, you're fine. Stay safe, Gary, and thank you so much, man.
You as well, guys. Always a pleasure. Always a delight. Thanks.
Same here. Thank you
great,
so much.
Guys, you're good, my friend.
Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and all-around good guy. And yeah, that'd be cool. Michaela Schifrin, boy, that would be cool. Interviewing her, I mean, just the world's greatest skier. And, oh, man. Bill Russell, Tim, the two people I still want to meet, and I don't know if it's going to happen. I want to meet Bill Russell, and he did a PSA. He's looking a little old now. I think he's 89 or 88. He did a PSA for get your vaccine, get your shot. And it's remarkable to see Coach Russell, but Bill Russell do that. And then the other guy I'd like to meet, and I don't know if these guys have had I don't know if Gary or Mike Grenier have interviewed Bobby Orr, but Bobby Orr is the other one I would love to meet. He's just so cool.
Yeah, the only guy that shows up with his own humble pie. You know?
What's that?
He's the only guy that shows up with his own humble pie. You know, you never hear him.
No.
Overly talk about himself or
no.
anything, you know.
No. He's the greatest, I'm telling you.
He's supposed to be a wonder. He really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a real, you know, it, and all that goes on sometimes in the world. There are more good people than there are bad. And Bobby Orr is one of the good ones. So, and so is Bill Russell. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back with Mike Grenier and talk some Celtics basketball, speaking of Bill Russell. So we will do that. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. Tim Kearns is on the line here with us. And Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer, and we will be right back.
Did you grow up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home? Were you abused or suffered childhood trauma at the hands of a parent or caregiver? Have you tried self-help or counseling without success? ACA can help. ACA is a 12-step recovery program for adults whose lives are affected as a result of being raised in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. To find out how others like you have found healing from traumatic childhoods, go to adultchildren.org. That's adultchildren.org.
We're back. Okay, and Daffy, Dizzy and Daffy?
Yeah, that's right.
The Dean Brothers. All right, we're back with Mike Grenier. And, Mike, real pleasure to have you back, man. Glad you're back on board with us.
Yeah.
I get to ask the first questions because I'm pressing the buttons and I got the mic here. The Celtics, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the fear of there being a 500 team. And lo and behold, they're a 500 team.
Yeah, and the thing is, the teams they've lost to or even beaten recently are not the Brooklyn Nets or the Milwaukee Bucks of the world. They are the Atlanta Hawks, you know, 13-18, and you know the team they lost to on Sunday, the New Orleans Pelicans, were 12-17 going into the game, and you know this is supposed to be the soft part of their schedule where they could build up some wins and be, you know, 4, 5, or 6 games over 500, but obviously that has not happened, and that's why there's this leading to this concern about how good or bad is this team.
Okay.
I checked a year ago, Rick, and at this time, after 30 games, the Celtics were 22-8.
Oh, my goodness. Well, listen, here's the thing. I watched the last couple of games. They won one, they lost one, which is what they've been doing.
Right.
The thing that made me feel good was the play of Robert Williams. Of course, the usual continued good play of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
Right.
But the play of Robert Williams seems to have been elevated. And Kemba Walker, all of a sudden, holy cow, he looks so different than what he did 2 weeks ago. And the other thing that was mentioned, one of the announcers, I think it was on yesterday's game, mentioned, look at Kemba's attitude. Look at what he does for a team. He threw a pass, somebody missed it underneath, and Kemba just smiled at him and said, okay, let's get it next time. Kemba is having some fun. And so that's the good news for me. The positive points, Williams and Kemba. The negative is, once again, as Tim has mentioned, they got a 24-point lead yesterday, and they lose.
Yeah, they were up by 21 with 3:40 left in the third quarter. So they got outscored by 26 in the fourth quarter in the overtime. And against a 12-17 team. And, you know, and a lot of fingers being pointed at Coach Brad Stevens. And I think that's the first time in his career. He's been on a honeymoon for several years because he's elevated the team from, you know, to be a contender. But I think this is the first season where being at 500, people, media, everyone is expecting more from the Celtics. I think if you went around the league and asked different coaches and general managers, they would have expected the Celtics to be much better than they are right now at 15-15. So I think for the first time in his coaching career, he's feeling a little bit of a hot seat. And there are people who are looking to say, okay, maybe we should move on from this guy because he's gotten the Celtics to the Eastern Conference Finals. However, they haven't been able to take that next step. And this year, it's been a backslide. You know, it's sort of like going to Mount Everest and being at the base camp closest to the summit, and now all of a sudden you're at camp number two instead of the top camp. You know, you're not quite ready to reach the summit of the mountain, you know. And I think that's been a problem for Brad Stevens. Granted, I will say this too, Rick, though. They do, defensively, they miss Marcus Smart an awful lot.
Yep.
He not only is a tremendous, you know, fundamentally good defensive player, but he instills in his teammates, I think, on the floor, an attitude of, hey, we better play defense or you're going to answer to me. And I think they really miss that element of toughness that Marcus Smart brings to the lineup every night. And really, they're saying, remember initially the report, because he had a strained calf, was it going to be out for 2 or 3 weeks? Well, it's been about 4 weeks now, and the closest date of return is after the All-Star break, March 9th or 10th or somewhere in there. So it's kind of a mystery as to when he'll be back, but they will certainly welcome him back because they miss his defensive tenacity, his attitude, and all that, because they're certainly blowing big leagues by playing poor defense.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I was looking at the ESPN site, and you look at the record, and they're averaging 110.8 points a game.
Right.
They're giving up 109.8.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a 500 team if I've ever heard of one.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I think they're, you know, right now they're ranked, they're number six in the Eastern Conference, Tim, as you know, and Rick. That means, and you know, you look at it, they're only a few games behind Brooklyn and Milwaukee at the top. However, they're only also a game and a half away from being in the ninth spot, you know, and being out of the playoff picture. So they really have to get on a run here. They're not early in the season anymore. They're 30 games into the season. At the halfway point, will be at 36 games, I believe. So they really have to straighten out some things that have been, you know, dragging them down for the entire season. The inconsistency is baffling to me, Rick, Tim, because they do have Tatum and Brown. And like you said, I believe Robert Williams has made the biggest leap of all the guys coming off the bench. But just the bench has been inconsistent. Danny Ainge went on radio last week and said that the roster that he built, this particular roster, is not good enough to win a championship, which tells me that he's going to make some moves before the trade deadline because he's not satisfied with this roster.
Well, you know, you said go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
I had Nate with radio on for about 10 seconds, but I heard them talking about when Stevens puts out the second team, he puts Jason Tatum out there, and Tatum thinks it's his floor to run. He brings the ball up.
Right.
He tries to make everything happen, and then he just finally throws one towards the net as the seconds tick down on the time clock. Have you noticed that?
Oh, no question. Yesterday, against the Pelicans, that was, you know, the game was on national TV, and it was a perfect example of that, Tim, because Stan Van Gundy, who used to be the coach at UMass Lowell, Stan Van Gundy, switched up his defense and he double-teamed Tatum as he came over half court, and Tatum would kind of freeze with the ball for 6, 7, 8 seconds before he got rid of the ball, and then when he finally got rid of the ball, the Pelicans would still recover and get the backside of the defense near the basket, and the Celtics left with 3 or 4 seconds left on the clock, and somebody's just jacking up a shot from anywhere. It was terrific defensive strategy by Stan Van Gundy, and really, Brad Stevens didn't adjust for quite a long time, and that's how that's how the Pelicans were able to make up that 21-point deficit, and most of it done in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, I completely agree with you, Tim, that it was just the great strategy was double-teaming Tatum, and what you have to do in those possessions is get rid of the ball as soon as you get that double team, and then because you have an advantage of 4-on-3 at that point, and you're either going to score inside, or else, you know, if you want to funnel the ball back to Tatum after he releases the ball, you can get it back to me when he's just a 1-on-1 situation. So that was a major problem yesterday, and of course, you know, the other problem was Kemba shot 5-for-20, 1-for-12 from 3-point land, and Jaylen Brown had a rare bad shooting night. He was 7-for-22. So those two players combined were like, you know, 12-for-44 or whatever it was. It just wasn't a good day for those two guys. But completely agree with you about Tatum. He has to recognize that the double teams right away and they have a strategy to beat those teams.
You're up 21-24, whatever the hell it is.
Yes.
You know, the Celtics used to be known for defense. I mean, so let me ask you, Mike, in your opinion, is the team talented enough to be doing better? Or is it just a lack of talent, or do you think it's on the coaching staff, or combination? I don't know.
I think you hit the last word. I think it's a combination of things, Rick. Obviously, as I mentioned, a year ago at this time, after 30 games, they were 22-8.
Yeah.
With essentially the same talent. And Brad Stevens has been searching for a spark plug off the bench. Sometimes he gets with the rookie Peyton Pritchard. But, you know, as with rookies, you know, Peyton Pritchard had 20 points in one game. And the very next night, he had 2 points.
He's lightning fast, though, and quick. Woo.
Yeah, and he's got a great 3-point shot. But rookies, you're not going to get that consistency, I don't think. And, of course, you know, Grant Williams has had some good games, but he's also had some bad games. Aaron Nesmith, the number one draft pick, he played a little bit yesterday. He got 10 points. I think it was the best game of his career. But overall, he's been a disappointment so far. So the bench has been really a huge, huge question mark. He can't rely on anybody on the bench to have a consistent game, and that's been a problem because you can't rely on Tatum and Jaylen Brown to get 60 points every night. And also, when a guy has a bad shooting night, like Jaylen Brown did yesterday, well, somebody has to pick up the slack. And if you've got a bench that's inconsistent, it's not going to happen.
Hey, with a name like Nesmith, shouldn't you be really good?
He should. He should be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he practiced with a peach basket.
Yeah, really. All right, I'm going to ask you, Mike, as we're getting close to time here,
yeah.
I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to ask Tim the same question, and I asked Gary this question. It's a little off topic, and we'll do it again next Monday. Hopefully the Celtics will have a better week.
Sure.
If you're up for it.
Yeah.
Okay. I asked Gary, and I was talking with Tim, there are two people I would still like to meet and would hope to interview. I still want to meet Bill Russell and just shake his hand. I just admire him so much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever got to meet him or interview him.
I did.
Oh, my God. I want to hear about that. And then the other one I want to meet is Bobby Orr. But is there someone in your sphere, is there an athlete or a news person or, I don't know, anybody that you still want to meet and interview?
Oh, my God, yes. Maria Sharapova.
Oh, okay.
I mean, she was a great champion. I mean, here's a kid, I think she came to America when she was 5 or 6 years old from Russia. She couldn't speak English. She learned the language. Then she won, I don't know how many majors. And, you know, naturally she looks like a model. Still does. She just had a great gracefulness about her when she played and also, I mean, she won Wimbledon at age 15. You know, just and she had a long career. It was beset by injuries late in her career. I did get to interview Anna Kournikova.
Really? Really?
Yeah, right in Danvers.
Okay.
Right in Danvers when they had that team tennis thing going.
Yeah, damn.
And she came in, you know, there was a road trip for the team she was on, you know, Brooklyn or somebody like
that. Were you married at that time, Mike?
No, she was not.
No, I said, were you married at that time?
Of course. I've been married 48 years.
Oh, okay, never mind.
And she was, you know what, she was actually delightful to talk to. There was a big group of maybe 7 or 8 reporters around her.
Amazing.
And there was obviously a team personnel there limiting her to like 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah.
But still, she was very, very knowledgeable, very talkative, attentive to people who were asking her questions. She was a delight to talk to. Really, she was great. Bill Russell, I interviewed him when he was coaching the Seattle Supersonics. And they would come into the garden, and like any other NBA coach, he'd do the post game. And, you know, God, I got to talk to him several times.
Hey, Mike.
You know, yes, sir, Tim.
If Rick got to shake Bill Russell's hand, would Bill Russell actually know he was holding Rick's hand?
No. Hell no.
And by the way, I think Russell, you know, Rick, you mentioned that great thing about Russell doing the PSA for the shot. And I think he just, at that point, he had just turned 87.
87, okay. Yep.
And he still looks good.
Yes.
You know, I swear sometimes he's probably a better player than Tristan Thompson. He could still play. You know?
I don't know, man, but God, it would be, there are some people, in doing what I'm doing with this little website, I've gotten to, I'm a science junkie, and I've gotten to interview some of my science idols, as it were. Big well-known people in the science world. And I've talked to a lot of great sports people. It's just such an honor to talk. And sports writers, it's just so great for me. But there are some icons, and I just respect Bill Russell so much for what he's done as a human being and as an athlete and just who he is. And I just, I told Tim, and I think I told you, I got to shake Tom Sanders, Sat Sanders' hands one day.
He's a great person.
At
great
the Garden.
Person.
Yeah, and just that, the shaking his hand, and he shook my hand, and just the warmth and the humanity that came from him. It's just, I just respect these guys, you know.
And Rick, you know, if I don't have much time, but very quickly, I can tell you that some of the guys I respected the most were the athletes who served in World War II. And I got to interview Ted Williams.
Oh, man, yep.
Who was great at spring training in Winter Haven, Florida. I was doing spring training with the Red Sox. And Bob Feller.
Yep.
Who served in World War II, of course, a Hall of Fame pitcher, tough as nails guy. He came to Fraser Field in Lynn.
Yes, Bill Newell got to bat against him.
Yes, exactly. And I was there that night, as was one of my colleagues, Kyle Siegel, who went on to work at the Indianapolis paper. And we got to talk to Bob Feller, interview him. And, of course, he was part of the World War II guys, you know, who left baseball and served their country.
Yep.
And those are the guys I have such a – my dad was in World War II, okay? So I have a particular – tremendous amount of fondness and respect for any of those guys who served in World War II.
Yeah.
So those two guys, Bob Feller and Ted Williams, two of my most memorable guys.
Ted Williams was the real John Wayne. And John Glenn said he was the best wingman I ever had. So there you go.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, just think of the numbers he would have put up.
Oh, God.
He'd had those prime years, you know, that he served the country.
Tim, your turn.
Yeah, his baseball numbers would have been astronomical, you know.
Well, let's see, as people were name dropping, I got to meet and talk with Gale Sayers.
Yes.
Who was as much of a gentleman as you could possibly put in the definition of the word.
That's a great one, Tim.
Style, oh my God.
I wish I had that pleasure because, oh my, as a running back, what, Tim, can we call him the most elusive running back that we've ever seen?
Style, man, could
it,
he run.
It makes like Hurts look normal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely great. Absolutely great.
Miguel, we got to wrap this up.
Yep.
I can't tell you how much this means to me. It's so important to do this for me on Monday nights as I try to get to the head of the line for my vaccination. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I want to wish both, you know, fortunately, my wife and I had our first shot. And
wonderful.
I'm hoping that you guys get it ASAP.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got mine Wednesday.
That's fantastic.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
Excellent. I hope to catch up to both of you. So, you know, there's brighter days ahead, but this is so much fun. So, Mike, we'll do it again next Monday?
Sounds great. Yeah, let's hope the Celtics are a couple of games over 500 by then.
I know. All right. Thanks, Mike.
Take care. Thanks an awful lot, guys. Take care.
Talk to you later.
Yeah. Bye-bye now.
So, Tim, is there anybody else that you'd want to meet or interview?
I'd like to go with Bobby. You know, my sister almost went out on a date with him, but he got lucky that night. He got hurt.
Oh, boy. you're cruel. Man, you're just cruel. Oh, jeez. I don't think B.O. would consider that jeepers creepers. Yeah, I've heard, I know a lot of people who have met Bobby or, you know, in the area. And Bill and I got to meet Brad Park, who was just a wonderful guy. He was awesome.
When I used to work, I used to work the door at the a nightclub up in on Route 1 in Peabody. And
you're not mentioning the name, are you?
the Balcony Lounge.
Okay.
For one free season, it was where the Bruins, who lived north of Boston, would stop on their way home. And this is where Dick Redmond played for them and all that. All those guys. and then I'll come in. Then I'll come in, and I'd have somebody else come to the door for me, so I could go over.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Damn straight. Okay, Coach, that's going to... That's
John Blum of the Bruins also lives next door to me, and he had a party, and I got to meet, about a dozen of them. All those mid-80 rookies that all drunk as skunks.
Well, I used to sit in the stands at the Talbot Rink with Rick Middleton, whose daughter and my daughter were skating on the ice together when they were small, and he's a great guy, and Johnny Busick would come to Captain Courageous a lot in Gloucester, and we'd see Johnny Busick.
I would like to meet the chief.
Yeah, he was something, man. He's something. All right, Coach, that's going to do it for tonight. I want to remind everyone that tomorrow we're going to have a lot of hockey talk here on MSO. We're going to be chatting with Newburyport hockey captain Tucker St. Lawrence. We're going to be talking with his coach, Paul Yamin, as Newburyport has wrapped up the Cape Ann League this year with a tremendous season. We'll chat with Andrew Jackson, the Masquinomen hockey coach, as Masco has tied Winthrop for first place in the Northeastern Conference in Masco's first year in the league. And we've got a really cool interview coming up on Connections with Dale Dunbar. And we do reminisce. Coach Dunbar talks about a lot of great stuff, as well as his Winthrop hockey team this year. And I want people to check out MSO News Sports tomorrow. Coach, any final thoughts?
Just stay well.
Amen. All right, that's Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore. Our producer and engineer, Bill Proposkin, of course, our guiding master here, Bill Newell. We wish you a very pleasant good evening, and thank you to all of our guests. Thank you for being with us. And again, you can contact us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com.